Santa bring the light.
Hi there, and welcome to Bring to Light, a podcast where we have open conversations about faith and life. I'm John.
I'm Jade.
And in this episode, we're going to be looking at healthy friendships.
We decided to look at this because I think people don't always realise how their friendships can make them or break them.
Yeah.
Like, actually, you know, I think we put a lot of emphasis on, like, looking for, like, romantic relationships and finding the right one with that. And obviously you can't pick your family, but I think sometimes maybe our friendships are kind of overlooked with how important they are.
Yeah.
And kind of how they shape your life and how you shape other people's lives as well. So I think it's really, like, important for those reasons.
Definitely. And I think the main principle, and if you take away one thing from this episode, it will be that your friends determine the quality and direction of your life.
Mm.
Your friends determine the quality and direction of your life. So Jade, I want to ask you, we've all given into peer pressure in our life. Can you think of any examples where you've given into peer pressure?
Well, off the top of my head, I think looking back, I was probably the one who, like, put pressure on others to do stuff.
Okay, you were the manipulator.
You were the
puppet master, were you?
Well, I was the kind of friend that the parents of the friends would, like, be like, oh, I'm so glad that my child is friends with Jade because she is such a nice girl. Like, yeah. I had a good reputation. But I had, like, this sneaky side to me where I did, like, getting other people to do stuff to entertain me, and as long as it wouldn't be traced back to me.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
It didn't always pan out that way because, like, literally, I can even remember being as young as, like, 8, and I asked my friend if she wanted a haircut. And she was like, she was a bit uncertain.
So you were 8, so you weren't a qualified hairdresser at this stage.
No, I wanted to play hairdressers with her, but I wanted to use real scissors.
Sure.
I'd tried it on my Barbies before, and I thought I'd done an all right job. So I said to her, oh, do you know what, like, can I cut your hair? Let's play hairdressers. And she was like, oh, she's a bit nervous. And she was like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, oh, it'll look really good. It'll be fine. No one will notice. And so she was like, oh, okay, then.
Which completely defeats the object of a haircut. Literally no one will notice. I get criticised for that. I get criticised for that now. If you come back from the hairdresser, you're like, what do you think? And I'm like, if your top or new trousers? Not my hair, John, my hair. Like,
yeah. So I remember I, like, started cutting her hair, and she had, like, fairly long hair, and I thought I'd give her a bob. And but the thing is, partway through the haircut, I got bored, and it actually really ached my hand. Mm. Like, I didn't realise actually how.
You're right, Jade. In many ways, you're the victim here.
So I just stopped halfway through, and I was like, oh, do you know what, should we just leave it there and stuff? And she was, like, a bit worried about going home, and I was like, don't worry, no one will notice. And, like, I genuinely thought no one would notice. I don't know why, but, you know, like, as a child, like, it was just weird because, like, obviously then later on, she went home. Later on, like, the next day, I went to, like, call for her to see if she'd come out to play, and her mum answered the door straight away, and she was furious with me. She's like, what have you done to my daughter's hair? And I was like, oh, I'm just going to, like, pretend I don't know what she's on about, because still believed that no one would notice, or, like, that I could explain it away. So I was like, I don't know what you mean. And she was like, follow me. And then, like, took me into, like, the living room, and she was like, look at her hair. And it literally was, like, half of her hair was, like, past her shoulder, and the other half was, like,
above her ear,
up by her jaw and things. And she had to have it all cut off to one length. And, like, it was, like, in that moment I realised, oh, no, I've messed up. Like,
sure.
It is really obvious. And, like, so that was, like, one of the times I got found out. But, like, I just do little things like that all the time, like, where I had a bit of a naughty side.
To be fair, like, you gave me, you've just given me another lockdown haircut, and you've done a pretty good job, to be fair. But the first time you did my hair, we're out in the garden because it was the summer. You did my hair and you were like, yeah, I think I've done a pretty good job of that. And I was trying to sort of look on my phone and check it out.
I did say in this light.
Later you said that. Gosh, you don't start by saying it. In this light, I think I've done a good job. That was your excuse later on when I came in and saw that I had sort of 3 tears to my hair and looked like a fab lolly. Right, and then you were like, oh, no, it just must have been this light. And I was like, I'm never trusting you again. And then we had lockdown and I had to. But no, to be fair, you have done a really good job since then. But I think you're not someone, you're someone who's quite arty. So I'm surprised that you couldn't tell both, even when you were 8, that this girl had a haircut that was completely lopsided.
I think I wanted to believe that you couldn't, like, see it. I needed to believe that because I hated getting in trouble, so I convinced myself.
Sure. I think we're quite similar because I think, like, and maybe that's why we got married and things, but, like, I think I was more likely to be the person who was like, yeah, do this, rather than the person who would do it.
Yeah.
I remember... I remember getting a friend. We were at Thorpe Park. I remember getting a friend to throw... so we were getting on like Nemesis Inferno or like one of the big rides at Thorpe Park, and we found just before we got on, I was with some friends and my dad and my brother. Just before we got on, I found this whole like bunch of Yakults, you know, like those yogurts, like the little tub, like a little bottle, like drinkable yogurt. And I gave one to a friend and was like, just like lob it off this ride. We were, honestly, it was, I don't think I've ever laughed as hard in my life, even though this is like such a horrible thing to do.
How annoyed would you be?
I waited until we were over the queue.
How annoyed would you be if you were waiting in the queue and all this Yakult came and flying over you?
I think I did. I did throw one as well, to be fair. So I kind of peer pressured my friend and myself. But like, we both threw a Yakult and literally it went like swirling down. And it was just, all I could think of though, I was just crying as it like landed all over people. And it's a horrible child. But all I could think of was just like the funniest thing that they'd thought. It was just like the biggest bird ever. And I just done a massive.
Did they
poo.
Like catch you?
No, like, but honestly, I laughed because you queue for like an hour and then you're on the ride for like a minute and a half.
Yeah.
But I probably laughed for the full ride round. Like the photo of me was probably just me like evil laughing round this ride. But yeah, I think like there probably are loads of times as well where I've given in to peer pressure. Or I've done something that I shouldn't do.
Mm.
And in fact, we could all think of times probably when. We wouldn't have done it unless our friends have. Like, we've probably all said to our parents, like, well, I only did it because Jackson did it or whatever. And it's like, well, if Jackson jumped off a cliff, would you do it?
Yeah.
Like, your mum would say that. Or if Jackson jumped in front of a bus, would you do that?
Put his hand in the fire.
Yeah, exactly.
We always use, like, the same, like...
They used the most mental example as well. Like, I stayed out half an hour later because Jackson was. It's like, well, if Jackson jumped off a cliff... No, mum.
Well, it wasn't harming. I wasn't good. Yeah. It wasn't self-harm to stay out half an hour later. But I fancy sticking my hand in a fire.
Exactly, a totally different category, mum. Like, staying out half an hour later was a bit of fun. Jumping in front of a bus is going to leave me in A&E at the best case scenario. But I think it's that point of there are some things we question and some things we don't.
Mm.
And as we look at healthy friendships today, we're going to look a little bit at what are those things that we can easily find ourselves just swept up in.
Yeah.
If you're someone listening to this and you've ever smoked, like ever in your life, 100% that's because of peer pressure. 100% that's because someone has offered you one and they're smoking and it's a friendship. I bet there's no one listening to this and just found a packet or just went to the shop on their own and was like, I'm going to try smoking today. It's always passed on to you or it's always encouraged by somebody else. Same with drugs. Probably the same with alcohol. I don't know anyone who had their first drink of alcohol just on their own, like in their flat
like
or something. It's sociable. And we're going to look at some of the good sides of peer pressure as well, because actually there's a phrase that you'd use if you've been in church much in your life. There's a phrase called accountability, which I guess is kind of this idea of like good peer pressure, whereby if someone knows about a goal or a plan or something you want to do or something you want to stop doing, you're more likely to achieve that goal. So this episode really is about how we form healthy friendships with the right people rather than just gravitating towards the wrong people. It's about how we recognise when maybe we've made some fake friends, and it'll be about learning what practical steps we need to take in light of this. Light bulb. So we thought we'd look at how we select our friends. Like, how do we choose friendships? What are the qualities we look for in a good friend? When we're younger, we're influenced mostly by what our parents think and what we think our parents think. But as we get older, when we become teenagers, we start to care more about what our friends think. And that's why we've sort of mentioned that our friendships determine the quality and direction of our lives, because we're so easily influenced by our friends, which is why it's really important to make good friends. So we asked you guys on the Instagram, what are the qualities you look for in a friend? And there's some great answers. We've got things like kind, honest, faithful, willing to go deep or be real, someone who makes me feel valued and loved, honesty, loyalty, faithfulness, thoughtfulness, encouraging, vulnerable, fun, trustworthy, good listener, loads of stuff. I'd say the big ones, honesty, trustworthiness, are huge. Faithfulness. We and this probably is indicative of the fact we've all been hurt by untrustworthy friends maybe at some point, and we're going to kind of come on to that. Jade, are there any that stand out to you, any qualities that you kind of look for in a friend, or things that are kind of non-negotiable for your closest friendships?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very similar to everyone else in regards to, like, you know, aside from fun and things and obviously having a laugh with them, it's a kind of like the trustworthiness of a person, I think, particularly for me, because when I became paralysed, I, at the age of 13, I really had to learn quickly, like, who were my true friends, basically, because obviously there were people who didn't stick by me and just couldn't, like, you know, cut it when it came to, like, me going through something hard. And then there were the friends who stood by me. And so, also for me, I guess I need friends to, like, help me more, even, like, physically. So I need to know that they're not just going to abandon me, like, somewhere. You know, particularly when I was a teenager, like, you know, if we were going, like, out somewhere in the night or, like, to a club, whatever, like, I really did need to make sure, like, my friends were going to look after me because I was vulnerable. And there are weirdos who like to wheel people in wheelchairs off. So, you know, yeah, so I think that kind of forced me to...
And you had experiences like that, didn't you, where things would happen, like a guy would hit on you or try and wheel you off, and so it's important for you to have good friends that were like, nah, what
are
you doing?
Who would stick up for me, who would, like, tell people to, like, back off and would, like, yeah, look after me and things. And I think learning from a young age who to trust and who not to trust, it kind of was a really invaluable thing for me, because... A lot of people don't learn that till a lot later on in life.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and I thankfully missed out on a lot of teenage drama because I had really solid friends from a young age.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's almost what we're going to look at next, because I think whilst we've looked at all the positive qualities we want in a friend, I think it's fair to say none of us choose friends based on those things. And that might sound surprising. I think we keep friends based on those things, but you don't choose friends based on those things because you don't know that about them when you first get to know somebody. And so what we actually do when we choose our friendships is we just gravitate towards acceptance. Maybe it's something similar about somebody. Maybe you both are watching Gossip Girl at the moment, or you both support the same football team, or you both got the same hobby. You both hate the same teacher, like, whatever it is, or you both love to bitch about your boss at work, or whatever it is, like, you gravitate towards acceptance. And obviously some of those things I've just listed there are more positive than others. But we don't necessarily select somebody. We don't sit somebody down for an interview and go, okay, so I've just moved to this new school, or I've just started university, I've just moved to this new job, and I'm looking for a new Bezzy, and what do you think you can bring to the role? Or here's my CV for friendship, and here's my past track record, and here's some references from previous friends about how great a mate I am. Like, we actually don't do that, and obviously that would be mental. But because of that, what really happens is we just gravitate towards acceptance, and that can be a good thing, but it can also be a really bad thing, because people will accept a lot of different things. Like, that's why most people have some form of friendships. That's why even when you look at the worst people in the world, they've still got mates. They've just got mates who are willing to accept horrible things that maybe we wouldn't. But everyone, or most people, have friends at some point in their life. And therefore, it's trying to work out, like, how then do we make sure that we choose the right friends for us? And how are we analysing our friendships? And that might sound quite clinical, but I think it's really important. If our friendships really do determine the direction and the quality of our lives, it's really important that we have healthy friendships. Light bulb. So in previous episodes, we've looked at the fact we're made for relationship. And if we're made for relationship, God clearly cares about our friendships. So Jade, what wisdom does God give us for our friendships?
I mean, there's a proverb that says, walk with the wise and become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm.
Great. Read that again for us.
Walk with the wise and become wise, but a companion of fools suffers harm.
Great. So what do you think that means?
I think you become like the people you spend time with. You know, if you're around wise people, you're going to learn from them and you're going to become more wise. Whatever habits they have, you're going to probably pick up on them. It's like Have you ever like hung out with someone and you start picking up on the little sayings that like they have, the the little mannerisms and things?
I had a mate at school. This is literally primary school. He was his mum was Jamaican, and he was just a really cool lad. And he would say, "That was cool, man." And so I remember saying that to my mum. I remember her being like, "Oh, we've got this for dinner." I'll be like, "Oh, it's cool, man." To my mum. And she was like, "You've been hanging out with my friend." And I was like, "Oh, no, I haven't. I'm my own person." But I knew, really, I was only saying it because he said it and I really liked him. And yeah, we can all think of examples like that. You do. You become like the people you spend time with.
Yeah, like I have family like who live like up north, like the Liverpool area. My mum used to get really annoyed because whenever we'd go up there to visit the family, I would start talking, not properly Scouse, but like in the tune of how they speak up there. So I'd start to be like, my mum would be like, "Jade, speak properly." And I'd go, "I don't know what you mean, mum." And I'd just start to talk in the tune. So my voice would stay the same, but it would just start to. And literally, it would drive my mum crazy.
You still do it now. When you go on the phone to your nan, straight away, you're like, "Hey, nan."
I can't help it.
And like, it's like, "Oh, no." You keep doing stuff like that. "Oh, hey."
I just copy whoever I'm with, I think. It's so bad. Because, like, I think when I go back to Wales, because that's where my mum and dad are still living and where I grew up, I probably get more Welshy when I go back to Wales.
Yeah, and there's positives and negatives about this kind of thing. Like, the positive is you've got good social skills.
Yeah, you want to fit in.
You want to relate to people. The negative could be that, well, actually, maybe for us that do that, and I do it too, we're a bit insecure and we're desperate to fit in. Mm. And there's no problem with wanting to fit in. Like, we're relational beings. We're made to fit in, or we're made for friendships. It depends what we're willing to do in order to fit in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, changing your accent has no moral repercussions and things. No. There's nothing, I mean, there's whilst I'm a southerner to the core, I have to accept there's nothing immoral about being northern. And so it doesn't matter. But if you're willing to change your character to fit in, that's when we've got real problems.
Hmm. Well, because like even with the proverb, it says, you know, but a companion of fools suffers harm. And I think with that, obviously, if you're around people who are fools or who are, you know, making stupid decisions, then you're going to get harmed in the process because you're probably going to be making the same kinds of decisions that they're making and behaving in the same way that they are.
Yeah.
And so that's what's going to kind of cause you harm. Whereas if you're with people who are, you know, making really good decisions in life and things, then you're going to just copy what they're doing because we're sociable and that's what we do.
And I always think this when you hear, like, and this is maybe a bit of a deep and sinister term perhaps, but I always think this when you hear about two or maybe a couple of people who are killing people. You know, when you get one serial killer and you think, okay, well, they're just a bit unhinged or not very well or psychopathic or whatever, or maybe they had a horrible childhood experience and whatever it is has caused them to have no empathy or whatever.
Yeah.
But when you get two, you always think, how does that... I mean, we recently watched The Serpent on BBC with Charles Sobhraj. If you haven't watched it, check it out. But he manipulates his girlfriend at the time and she's basically completely complicit
just
in it.
And she's just seemed like a normal girl from a normal background but got caught up in it.
Yeah, and suddenly she's got like partnering with him in these crimes.
Yeah.
And I think if we're not careful, we do just become like people and our conscience says... The problem with saying, and I've heard this before, is... when you tell somebody that something is immoral and they say, "Well, I don't feel guilty." The problem is the more you do something immoral, the less guilty you feel. There's this idea that your conscience gets seared. So what you once felt bad about, you will no longer feel bad about when you do it enough times. I heard a preacher say, if you can't live in the way you believe, you start believing in the way you live. And I think that's sort of so powerful and so true, because if you can't live up to how you want to live, you end up having to, if you can't change the way you live, you end up having to change what you believe.
You want to justify the life you're living.
Yeah, exactly. And we hear, who doesn't do that? We all do that on some level. Like, we all think, for instance, so swearing was something I was told as a kid was wrong. Do you know what I mean? I remember saying like the other thing. I remember not realising it was a bad word even and saying like, saying in front of my mum, like, oh, that lady's a slag. And she went like, where did you hear that? And and she, it didn't even make sense in the context. Like, it was just, it was just ridiculous. You know, like, and things, I think I was just, I just said it out loud. I think I just meant like a plonker or an idiot or something.
Yeah,
but I, so I knew it didn't have a positive connotation. And I remember her saying, we don't say that. And so quickly I learned that swearing or horrible or crude language was wrong. But then I went to an all-boys school at secondary school and my language was dreadful just because everyone else was swearing. And so suddenly your conscience becomes seared. When you first use a bad word, you think, oh, it's a bit naughty. But and after a while, it just becomes normal, or you certainly, it certainly becomes normal in certain contexts. I didn't go home and like effing and jeffing in front of my nan or something. But still at school, it was just completely normal. And so we can easily sear our conscience and just become like the people we spend time with.
I mean, as well, like, if you go back to, like, the beginning of, like, the creation of, like, man and woman and Genesis and things, like, you could say, like, peer pressure got us into all the mess we're in today.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know, like, the snake peer pressured Eve into, like, having the fruit, taking the fruit and eating it, and then she ate it, and then she basically... peer pressured Adam, really, because it was like, well, she's eaten it, and so I'll eat it too, kind of thing. And didn't really, like, kind of just copied whatever she did, because she'd already done it. So, yeah, I don't know, it's like, it seems to have been a problem from the get-go, really.
Definitely, because we're just so easily influenced, aren't we?
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to look at as we go on. We're going to look at the problem of being influenced by the wrong people. And the encouragement, really, I think we can take from Genesis is, do we trust God?
Yeah.
Do we trust God is good? In that story, God said, don't eat from that tree because you'll never be the same again. And Satan says, well, in the form of the snake, says, oh, I don't know if you can trust God, and sort of throws doubt on that situation. And before you know it, Eve and Adam had never done anything wrong, are suddenly becoming different people. That you become like the people you spend time with.
And they weren't wise enough to see through the lies of the snake as well. And I think that's an important thing as well, is when you're trying to determine whether your friendships are healthy or good, you have to have like wisdom and discernment to know whether that person is actually like telling you the truth and actually being a positive influence on you, or whether they're being a negative.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. And so there's a phrase that says, if you fail to plan, then plan to fail. And obviously now none of us plan to fail, but I think often the problem is we don't plan not to fail. Like, we don't have a plan often for our lives, full stop, but certainly for our friendships. And I think this is really important for us to think about, like, the key areas of life. What is your plan? We talk about this. I've been a youth worker for the last decade. And when we have students go off to university, we run a course with them about what is your plan for uni, and that involves their finances and like whether they want to join social clubs. But it also includes things like their plan for sex and relationships, their plan for drinking. Because if you're over 18, we've probably all been in a situation where if you go out thinking, I might get drunk tonight, you probably will get drunk. Whereas if you go out thinking, I'm only going to drink this much, then you've kind of got a plan for that. And so do you have a plan? Because if you wait and see what happens, you'll often make bad choices because we're easily influenced. Sometimes the question isn't what is right or wrong, but what is the wise thing to do. So we want to chuck that out there for you. If you've got a big decision to make, or you're trying to work out how to live your life, it's really hard sometimes to work out like what is right and wrong. What's easier is to work out like what is wise. Is this going to help my life? Is this going to take me in the direction where I want to be? Based on my goals and my future plans, is this going to help me reach those? If you're a Christian, or you want to submit and give your life to God, like, is this going to take me closer to God or further away from him? And so I think when we start thinking about having a plan, and we're going to come on to that a little bit more in a minute, that's a really helpful thing for us to have, rather than just wandering through life. And there's a great phrase I love that says, only dead fish go with the flow. And I think that's just such a great and easy to remember and funny quote, because no one wants to be like that. Sometimes we've got to swim against the tide, and sometimes we've got to take charge of our lives. And sometimes we've just got to make sure we're not just swept up with what everyone else is doing. light bulb. So, Jade, the proverb we looked at the beginning was walk with the wise and become wise, because a companion of fools suffers harm. Mm. So, obviously, the aim is to be wise and to avoid being a fool. What are some of the characteristics, do you think, of wise people or foolish people? Like, and what proverbs, there's other proverbs that talk about this. Maybe we could look at some of those now to kind of look at the characteristics of wise people and look at some of the negative stuff of foolish people.
Yeah, sure. Like, another one is, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly.
Nice.
Not a very nice image.
As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Yeah, big challenge that. If you've got a dog, you'll know what dogs do when they return to their vomit. Like, they've just been sick. I imagine something's made them unwell. Often what dogs do when they return to their vomit is eat it again.
Yeah, they do it quite a lot, because I obviously grew up with a dog and they just regurgitate their food. So yeah. They literally vomit up and then eat it.
And then probably it makes them sick again and then they're eating it again. And I'm sure it's not some infinite loop. But at the same time, clearly, if something's made you sick, you're stupid to return to it.
Yeah.
That's the point of this. And with foolish people, I guess we see that all the time, and you've probably seen it in your own life as well. It's why people often bounce from one toxic relationship to another. That is why, if you've ever heard like somebody go, I don't know what it is, I just love bad boys. It's like, okay, you return into your vomit then.
And I don't know why I'm single.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so unlucky in love.
Yeah.
You're not unlucky, you're making bad choices. And so, and not in every case, that might have sounded a bit too judgmental, but if you're choosing bad boys, you're not unlucky in love. Yeah. You're being a fool.
Can't be surprised when they behave badly.
Yeah, exactly. I just love bad boys, but I don't like it when they treat me badly. But yeah, exactly. And we can think of loads of different areas probably in your own life where you think, oh, why do I keep doing this?
Isn't there that saying about like, the definition of insanity is
doing the same thing
and expecting a different result. And it's basically this proverb, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, exactly. It's a modernised version of this proverb, for sure. and so one quote I love is like, make a million mistakes, but quit making the same ones.
Mm.
And I think it's like, we don't want to be risk adverse. We don't want to be so scared that we're going to be sick that we never try new food. But if we do try new food and it makes us sick, we'd be stupid to keep eating something that's clearly damaging us. And so, yeah, great proverb. This is a good one. Proverbs 18 says, fools find no pleasure in understanding, but delight in airing their own opinions.
Mm.
And that just makes me think of the internet.
Yeah.
Like, that just makes me think of Twitter. Is like, literally this proverb, cat-like, exemplified. People just, there's no experts anymore, or people don't rely on experts anymore. There used to be a time when if you were ill, you'd go to the doctors, or if you needed to understand a deep theological point, you'd go to a priest or a rabbi or like someone who worked for the religion that you wanted to pursue. But now people are like, I know that. Or like, if you're sick, you just go on WebMD and you
can finish Google yourself,
you're dying. And, exactly, you just Google everything. And of course, there's some great positives of the internet, but we've kind of lost the respect for people who've actually studied.
Mm.
Most people's study and information now is just through YouTube videos or things. And again, there's some great stuff on YouTube, but there's also a load of old nonsense on there too.
Mm.
And I think that's a great one. Fools find no pleasure in understanding. Mm. So they're not actually trying to understand. They're just wanting to voice their thoughts. And I think, it's clearly foolish, but I wonder how many of us fall into that trap. Last one, I think it'd be good. For lack of discipline, they will die, led astray by their own great folly. Sounds very extreme. Like, for lack of discipline, oh what, they'll get fat because they'll eat bad food. For lack of discipline, oh they won't get a good job because they won't study hard enough. For lack of discipline, they will die. That suddenly sounds so extreme. But I think what that's getting at is, whenever you're not disciplined and whenever you go away from what's good for you, you're going in the direction of death.
Mm.
Whatever that looks like. Like, you're not going towards a healthy and fruitful relationship. You're going towards dying and unhelpful ones. You're not going towards an edifying job. You're going in the direction of your career dying.
Mm.
I think, again, there's just obviously we're Christians and you already know that we believe there's so much wisdom in the Bible, but you can't help but find so much wisdom when you read Proverbs and probably think of people when you read some of these out. We can think of people led astray by their own folly, thinking they know best and then doing nothing. We can think of like probably keyboard warriors we know who are like, they'll thrash out a great idea behind something or like some big deep thought, but they're doing nothing with their lives. Like they're just led astray by their own folly. So we've looked a little bit about what foolish people look like and maybe what wise people look like, and I encourage you to read Proverbs a bit more. You'll find loads of advice about kind of contrasting wisdom and folly, or wise people and foolish people. But what has this got to do with our friendships?
Light bulb.
So in this last section, we're going to look at how we analyse our friendships and then what we do with the conclusions that we come to. So we've looked at if you want to be wise, you need to hang out with wise people because a companion of fools suffers harm. We've looked at the fact we become like the people we spend time with. We've looked at the fact that often we just gravitate towards acceptance. And we've also looked at the difference between wise people and foolish people and looked at the attributes of wise lives and foolish lives. But what's all this got to do with our friendships, and how do we get kind of practical about this now? How do we analyse our friendships? And I think one of the biggest things we're afraid of, and that's kind of reflected in the Instagram responses from you guys, one of the biggest things you valued, and almost everyone of the 20, 30 people who got in touch with us, almost everyone mentioned trustworthiness or honesty. And I think it's because we're terrified of having counterfeit friends. We're terrified of having fake friends. What if they're not all they claiming to be? What if they're not honest? What if they're not trustworthy? And what is a counterfeit? Well, it's something that looks like the real deal, but it isn't. That's what a fake is. It looks like the real deal, but it isn't. Jade, why is that dangerous?
I think it's probably dangerous for two reasons. I think the first is that it reduces our incentive for finding the real thing. Like, if you had, like, unlimited counterfeit money, you wouldn't really have the motivation to find a real job.
Yeah, great. So you kind of rest on your laurels a bit, I guess. Like, if you've, as long as you've got something. So even if your friends are fake, well, I've still feels like I've got friends.
Yeah.
So it reduces your incentive to find healthy ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, and I'd say the second thing is it's just, yeah, it's hard to leave behind. Like, it's the same thing as money, really. Like, if it works, if you're getting away with it, then why would you bother needing to use real money?
Yeah, sure. It's really hard to throw away fake money if fake money is paying your bills.
Yeah.
Because it still feels like it's serving a purpose.
Mm.
Yeah, great. And I think the problem with that, and the problem with having fake friends, is just like using fake money. Sooner or later, it will lead to our downfall. Like, we will get hurt eventually. Someone will realise, like, if you're using fake money, hang on, this isn't real. And then you've got nothing. And I think the same with friendships. Sooner or later, if you're hanging out with fake and foolish friends, like, you'll get hurt. A companion of fools suffers
it's
harm.
It's kind of like, to keep on that analogy, it's like you've got nothing in the bank. So,
yeah, great.
Like, you've got no depth. To, like, put it in a relational, like, way, it's, you know, you're going through the motions of a friendship, but you've got no real depth or...
You can't rely,
like,
on it.
No.
Yeah.
When things get hard, you haven't, like, got all that money in the bank, you haven't got all that, like, all those, that real friendship to kind of, like, carry you through.
And you haven't got that security and support. And that kind of goes back to what you touched on earlier when you kind of recognised, when you became paralysed age 13, who are your fake friends and who are your real friends? Because your real friends were dependable regardless. They were, oh, gosh, I'm sorry you've gone through this, Jade, and I know we can't go dancing anymore or whatever, but I'm still here for you because I love you for who you are, not what we do. Whereas your fake friends were like, well, I'm not...
You're not fun anymore, and actually you're a responsibility, and I don't want that responsibility.
And there wasn't that depth and things. And so, yeah, great. So how do we spot fake friends then? Like, I think that can be really hard. It's all very well realising that we might have some, but kind of how do we spot them?
I think for me... You know, when you need advice, who do you go to? Your friends. And I think, unfortunately, if you've not got real friends or, like, friends who have your best interests at heart, then you're going to be getting bad advice.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to be going to them with serious issues or problems that you've got, and they're going to be telling you all the wrong things.
Yeah.
And your life is going to spiral.
Definitely. I think one of the signs of a fake friend is they just lack solid conviction.
Mm.
So whenever you ask them, hey, what do you think I should do? Or, hey, I'm worried about this. Is this a good thing for me to be doing? Or whatever. They'll say things like, hey, do what you feel is right. Or like, no one else can tell you what to do. You do you, hun. Like you're in charge of your own life. Or those kind of like mantras that are wishy-washy. And you think, literally, you could give that advice to Hitler. If Hitler was coming to you saying, I'm thinking about killing a load of people, that's that kind of advice of, hey, do what you feel is right, Adolf. Like, you do you, hun.
It's because they care more about themselves and you liking them than they do about your well-being.
Yeah.
So that's why they won't tell you the
truth. They'll champion you and support you no matter what ridiculous path you're about to take.
Yeah.
So the real friends, and this will be a challenge for some people, because some of you have probably lost friendships with real friends because they've said, hey, you shouldn't date that guy.
Yeah.
Or, hey, you shouldn't be doing that, or like, that sounds like stealing from your place of work. Actually, I know that you're kind of justifying it by saying it's only this or it's only that or whatever, but if you're claiming expenses for something that's personal, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, they're the kind of friends you actually want. And some of us, and maybe some of you listen to this, have branded them as haters, or that they're always like finding fault in your life. Actually, they're probably the truest friends you've got. Like, true friends tell you when your breath stinks. Like, true friends aren't afraid to upset you in order to tell you the truth. True friends are like, I don't like that jacket. Like, and obviously when you've asked an honest, maybe in a loving way, they're not like, oh my goodness, well, have you, did you brush your teeth with poo? Like, they're not horrible. But they would go, hey, do you want chewing gum? Because like, your breath isn't the freshest. They're the people who will say the hard things to you. So one sign of a counterfeit friend, they lack solid conviction. They another sign, I think, is that they've got self-destructive behavior in their own life. Like, they usually demonstrate some self-destructive behavior, and I think if you're friends with people who rarely take care of themselves, how can they have your best interests at heart? I think that's a challenge, and we wouldn't necessarily see that as fakeness, but I think they're not helpful friends for you. They're not real friends because they're not going to be able to provide real support for you. It's a little bit like I wouldn't go to a mechanic who didn't take care of his own car.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If a friend of mine was like, hey, let me help you fix your car, I know all about cars, and I looked over at his and it was an absolute scrap of rust, I would just be like, I'm all right, thank you, mate. And so if they haven't got their own life in check, it's going to be very hard for them to be a real friend to you.
I think another thing to take into consideration when you're trying to figure out whether you've got a fake friend is, what do they say about you when you're not around?
Yeah.
Because I think a real friend cares about your reputation and will stick up for you when you're not around and other people may be talking about you.
Yeah.
And so for me, I know that's like quite a big thing.
Yeah, that's great. I think one thing I've done before and encouraged people to do, and people have done the same to me, is if you find yourself talking about someone who's not present, do you encourage that person to go and actually tell them? So rather than going, yeah, they can be like that, you don't have to slag off your friend or lay into them or join in and multiply the gossip. You could just say, okay, well, like, if that's how you feel, if you feel Janice is lazy and she's not pulling her weight in the office, or if you feel like Bob is doing X, Y, and Z, or you just can't trust him, like, have you spoken to them about that? Because the chances are that could rectify the situation, and it's much more honourable as well. That's great. I think the last thing to think about with regards to fake friends is, what direction is your relationship going in? Because I think it's important to think and remember that no matter what your friendship is like, friendships never stand still. They're always moving in a direction. They're always going one way or another. Are they going in a good direction, or are they going in a bad direction? And you can ask yourself, if this friendship continues to move in this direction, where will I end up? So if you've got a group of friends and it started off, they were just smoking, and then they were just drinking, and now they're smoking weed, and now a few of them are doing coke at parties, like, is that going in a good direction? That relationship and that friendship and that group of friends, they're not standing still. They're clearly going down a path towards what most of us would describe as destruction. And that works the same, actually, the other way around as well. Like, if the direction of your friendships going well, like if several of you have started the gym and you're getting healthy and you're meeting to chat about your goals for the future or whatever it is, like, obviously that's going in a really good direction. So those are four ways you can spot a counterfeit friend. Do they lack solid conviction? Is their advice kind of wishy-washy and they're always a yes man? Do they display self-destructive behavior in their own lives? What do they say about you behind your back? And what direction is your relationship going in?
Light bulb.
So, what do you do when you realise your friends are fake? Like, what do you do when you realise you have some counterfeit friends? I want to talk to you about, and this we're going to put a picture up on our Instagram that will explain this a little bit better. But your friendships and your relationships fall into three concentric circles. It sounds more complicated than it is. Basically, in the outer circle, you have your circle of concern. So this is just anyone you know falls into this circle. So people you work with that you're not particularly close with, people in your class, or people, maybe your neighbours, anyone that maybe you would like to influence in some way, and you care about on some level, but you're not super close. In the second circle, so in a slightly more inner circle, you have your circle of influence. So these are the people who you allow into your life enough that they will influence you in some way. So if they think something, you might start to share that thought. If they're really big on an idea, or if they said, oh, you need to check out this show, you probably would check it out. Like, they're your closer friends. And finally, in the middle circle, you've got your circle of intimacy. And these are the person you marry. These will be probably your parents at some stage, maybe forever. Anyone you date will go into this circle of intimacy, and maybe your very, very closest friends. Mm. So you probably only have, I don't know, up to 10 people in this circle in your life ever. Mm. Maybe only sort of 4 or 5 at any given time. I've probably got about 3 or 4 people in this, and one of those is you, Jade. Like, yeah. You don't let many people into this circle. Now, the reason this is important is because obviously your circle of concern, it's okay to have anyone and everyone in this because you're not especially influenced by them. But as you get closer to people, you see your circle of concern, you're not overly influenced by. But as you get closer to people, your circle of influence, you are more influenced by. And your circle of intimacy, you'll become very much like those people. Mm. And so particularly with your circle of intimacy, you need to make sure that those people, they're your like ride or die people. Those are the people that have got your back no matter what. Those are the people that would do anything for you. They'd travel across the other side of the world if you were struggling and they could help you. They would be there in a flash. And it's really, really important that you have wise people in that circle. And so as you're listening to this, if you're thinking, actually, I'm not sure I do have wise people in that circle of intimacy, what can we do about that? We're going to get onto that. But one thing I want to say just before I do is, therefore, the people you date should come, they will go into your circle of intimacy, the middle circle. The people you date should come from your circle of influence into your circle of intimacy. So they should only be going from one circle into another. Mm. They shouldn't come from your circle of concern straight into your circle of intimacy, because you just don't know enough about them. Mm. When we spoke earlier about gravitating towards acceptance, you might have loads of people that you think are hot in your circle of concern, or loads of people that you think, oh, if I got to know them, I'd maybe date them. But to go from the circle of concern and to skip the circle of
influence
straight into the circle of intimacy is going to be really damaging. And we can probably all think of friends, or maybe you yourself, who have done that. That's why you date slowly. That's why you can go on a date from someone in your circle of concern and allow them into the circle of influence slowly. So I'll go on a date, see what they're like. It's just a coffee, just getting to know them. But they shouldn't go straight into the circle of intimacy. Mm. That's one of the reasons why, when we spoke about the sex episode, you shouldn't start a relationship straight away by sleeping with somebody, because they go, especially someone you barely know, they go straight from your circle of concern, straight into your circle of intimacy. And before you know it, you're becoming like somebody you barely even know, bonded together really only by your sexual chemistry at this stage. It's just really, really unwise.
Yeah, and I think particularly if you like meet them on a night out or like on an app and you sleep with them straight away,
yeah,
like they weren't even in your circle of concern before before that, and now they're in your circle of intimacy. Like, that's mental.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it's so wise to have boundaries with people and to let them in slowly for your own safety, really, and well-being.
Yeah, definitely. So that's kind of an aside on dating, but dating, really, one of the reasons we've mentioned it is one of the big reasons you get married even, or date, or like have romantic relationships. One of the fundamentals, and we touched on this a little bit, I think, in the sex episode, is for friendship. Like the reason Jade and I like are so in love, I would say, is because we're best friends as well. It's not just a physical thing. And if it were, like, it would have fizzled a long time ago, because the second you got kids and the second real life takes over, like, that's just not one of the top priorities anymore, even. And so I think, your friendships are crucial, and anyone you date, this advice also applies. So what do you do if you realise that you've got a counterfeit friend and they're in your circle of influence, or even worse, they're in your circle of intimacy? Well, it might be painful, but it's important to take steps, because as we've already said, our friendships determine the quality and direction of our lives. And so you can do nothing. Mm. That's option number one. You can just do nothing. But there are two options I'd encourage you to take that are more practical and better for you. You can do nothing, but the two that I would encourage, either step back, so you just adjust how much time you spend. Maybe you have it on your terms. You don't have to cut them out of your life completely, but you could encourage someone from the circle of intimacy into the circle of influence just by spending a bit less time with them, just by stepping back. That isn't unloving, by the way. It might be the best thing for both parties. The other thing you can do is just step away and completely end the friendship. Now, that seems quite, that might seem quite harsh and quite blunt, but again, if this relationship is harming you, the chances are it's harming them as well.
And like, we're not just talking about like ghosting someone where you just completely like drop off the face of the earth, where one minute they think they're best friends with you and the next minute they're like, where are they?
One moment they're set to be your maid of honour and the next minute they're blocked on all the socials. Like, no, we're talking, you have that conversation even with them, and I think you just say, hey, look, I don't think we're good for each other. And you can even give examples. Like, it would be obvious, I'd imagine, to both parties if this is the case. The examples we gave earlier, if your friendships have led down the path of just substance abuse and really all you've got in common is you all like to just crack on with X, Y and Z, then I think talking to someone and saying, look, I'm not interested in that anymore, drugs are hurting me, it's been painful, this isn't good for me, I need to step back from you guys because I can't be around you and not do drugs. It might be, they might not like it, but I think ultimately, like, that it's a no-brainer, isn't it, really? And so stepping back or stepping away, it isn't judgmental. You're not saying that person isn't worthy of love. You're not saying that person is just an evil human being. You're just recognising that in the season of life that you're in right now, they're not good for you, maybe, and vice versa. And if this is sounding harsh, or if this is even sounding a bit elitist with regards to like ranking your friends, like, I believe Jesus did this. Like, Jade, do you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, I think you can see that Jesus clearly has closer friends and less closer friends. And if we're going to go with the concentric circles, you know, his circle of concern would have been anyone, you know, anyone he helped, you know, healed people, just anyone he came into contact with, really.
He came for the world to love the
exactly,
world.
Exactly, yeah, and he was loving to everyone. And then I'd say his circle of influence would have been his 12 disciples. He would have spent, you know, a lot of time with those 12, and they would have known Jesus in a deeper way than just anyone else, you know, who was around at the time. And then obviously his circle of intimacy would have been, you know, like his mum. And there were some disciples that were closer to Jesus. So you've got, you know, James and John, and you've got Peter.
If he has a big task, he tends to take those three.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems very clearly that throughout the Bible, often he'll take those
three.
He'll
go off with them and they kind of go deeper with Jesus. So even Jesus had, you know, kind of boundaries in friendships, healthy boundaries with friendships, because you can't have, it's not possible to have more than a handful of people circle of intimacy.
Definitely.
Because it's not intimate otherwise then. Like, you can't spread yourself that thinly, you know? And so, I mean, anyone knows once you get married and have kids as well, like, it's even harder to catch up with friends.
You're just time poor a lot of the time. And I don't know if you find yourself, as you listen to this, thinking, yeah, I just don't have much time. Like, I've got so many friends I wish I could catch up with more.
Yeah.
And so many people, sadly, that have gone from my circle of intimacy probably into my circle of influence, just because we're just so busy, or we live on different sides of the world now, or whatever it is. Mm. And that's not to say that the people you can't spend as much time with as you'd like to suddenly go straight into your circle of influence. They could still be in your circle of intimacy. In fact, some of my closest friends that are in my circle of intimacy, I don't get to speak to every week or even every month. So it's not just about the length of time you spend with them. It's very much about the depth you go with them, and that's why it's important that you only have wise people in that, because you don't want to go deep with someone who is shallow. Yeah.
Light bulb.
So we've looked at a lot of the criteria that's important when it comes to selecting friends, but obviously friendship goes two way. The goal isn't just to attract great friends. The goal is to be a good friend. And there's a whole load of stuff we could say about what it means to be a good friend. But Jesus talks about it. Jesus says there's no greater love than being willing to lay down your life for your friends. So we could talk about encouragement and we could talk about just being funny and kind and those things. But Jesus really takes it a whole lot further than that and says that particularly for people in your circle of intimacy, they're probably there because you would die for them tomorrow in an instant. Like you would just die for them without even having to think about it. And that's what it means to be a good friend and to love people.
Yeah, I mean, and we read like a really inspiring story about this kind of thing the other day, didn't we? You know, Virgil Smith. And
yeah,
it's about this boy who basically he lives in Texas, in Houston, and Hurricane Harvey was kind of forecast for that area. And so he was up late at night, I think it was like 2 a.m, playing video games like a typical teenager. And then they could feel like that the rain was starting to pour and like that, you know, the flood waters were like starting to rise a bit. So I think there was kind of a little bit of tension and things in his own house. And anyway, he gets a call from his friend.
The floodwaters flooded his whole house, and he saved his mum and sister.
Yeah, so they kind of went up, didn't they, up into the higher apartments to stay safe.
Yeah.
And then his friend calls him, doesn't he?
Yeah, Kashawn.
And says, like, I'm in trouble here. Can you come over and can you help us, basically, wasn't it? And I think he was only, how old was
he? He was 13. And like, he immediately springs into action.
Yeah,
like,
he just goes and sees that they've got a blow up bed. And he just thinks that'll do. And he just paddles over. And it's pitch black. It's like 2 a.m. in the morning to his friend's apartment, which is like dangerously flooded. And he saves him and his whole family.
Mm.
And he doesn't just stop there. Like, he keeps going. And anyone he can hear, he kind of swims to on his little inflatable bed. And he helps them and saves them. And didn't he save up to, like, 17 people?
Yeah, saved 17 people's lives. I think he was given, like, a hero award.
Yeah.
And things at his, like, school. And he was, like, on, like, the news and
stuff.
Yeah,
and he was, like, such a, like, shy, unassuming boy, wasn't he, and things. But, like, how inspiring his story is and just... what a great friend. Like, you know, his friend, what was his friend's name, did you say?
Kashawn.
Like, Kashawn, do you know what I mean? Just knows he can call his friend and his friend will come and save his life.
Yeah.
Like, how awesome is that? Like, I want to be that kind of friend.
And I think that's the reality, isn't it? Is that your best friends love you and love shows up.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's why, and I think that segues really nicely into the fact that we recently asked you, like, how would you describe, we recently asked you on our Instagram, if you're a Christian, how would you describe your relationship with Jesus? And 70-80% of you put just my best friend. And that's such that's brilliant thing to talk about, but that's something that's quite exclusive to Christianity. Like, not every religion would think of themselves as friends with God. Like, it's quite a unique and incredible opportunity we have, that like most people think of them as maybe servants of God or worshippers of God, but God is so much better than humanity. And Christians believe that too. God is so much better than us, but he in his humility was willing to lower himself to become like us in order to be a friend with us. I think that's just incredible. There's a moment when Jesus says to his disciples, I no longer call you servants because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, I call you friends because I've made known everything you need to know about me and about God. And I just find that just so inspiring. And I think I wonder, Jade, like, what maybe we could end just by sharing a story each, perhaps, about a time when that made a difference for us. Because the whole idea of being a friend with God is quite abstract. I wondered, like, could we just put that in context for people, or give something tangible to people?
I mean, I know for me, particularly after becoming paralyzed, which I've obviously mentioned earlier, when I was 13, you know, I had a lot of time on my own, particularly in my teenage years when I was kind of housebound for a while and things, or after major surgeries or whatever. Yeah. And so I had a lot of time on my own, and I really felt like my relationship with Jesus in those times really made me not feel lonely. Even though I spent a lot of time on my own, I didn't actually feel lonely. And things like I knew that, like, he was aware of everything I was going through, and he understood, and like that gave me comfort. And I think also, like, even in a more practical way, I had really good, solid Christian friends who would just, like, ring me out the blue or turn up at my house out the blue and just be like, oh, I just want to, like, come and spend time with you. And yeah. I know you can't leave the house, but, you know, I'll just come in and hang out with you for a few hours and things. And, like, I really felt like they were that thoughtful because of their faith, you know, like, they were definitely kind of living it out and stuff. So I benefited from kind of, having that, like, practical stuff of just having friends who were living out their faith as well and being a good friend to me. So
that's great, and I love that we've touched on there, because there's a few ideas around what God is like, and one of them is that he is all loving. So like he will always love us. Nothing can separate, nothing can detract from the love that he has for us. One of them is that he's like ever present, like he's always there. And I think like you've obviously touched on that with regards to like some friends weren't always there, like you were 12 like when it happened, and so understandably lots of 12-year-olds didn't know what to do or how to respond or how to be a good friend to you, and so that probably would have left you really lonely had it not been for your faith and knowing that you could always turn to God in prayer and that he was always hearing you. We mentioned it in the mental health episode, but the comedian Frank Skinner talks about the fact that you can just always be completely yourself with God, because there's no way you can BS God. Like, and so I love that about like loneliness, or like, you know, your best friends, you just give them warts and all, don't you? You don't try and sugarcoat things. If life is absolutely crap at the minute, you just say that. And I love that that's sort of the reality of our friendship with God as well. And I'd say that's probably one of the biggest things I've experienced as well. There's been a few times in my life, and again, we touched on it a little bit in the mental health episode, so feel free to go back and listen to that if you haven't. There's been times in my life when I've never felt so... I had depression for a while, and I've never felt so low as to be suicidal, but I've felt so low as to be apathetic about my life and almost just wishing I was with God. Like, just that I had no more pain and no more suffering. And I remember praying on one occasion that God would just take me, like, just go to heaven. And ultimately, I guess it was a bit like I just wanted to die, really. And it seems really weird to say that now, because I feel like I love my life and I can't ever imagine wanting that to be the reality. I'm looking forward to being with God in heaven, but I love my life here on earth as well, and I'm in no rush to get to heaven right now. But like, just the idea that I remember praying in just my brokenness to him, and just feeling so much warmth and so much love in those moments, and almost peace returning, not always, but like more peace than I had before. And it just the most encouraging thing ever is being a friend of God for me has just absolutely transformed my life. The only other thing I'd say is I remember feeling like I wasn't improving in my like walk with God. I remember thinking he is the God of heaven and I'm just dreadful compared to that. Some of the things I do, or some of the things I say, or even just some of the things I think, like, are so horrible sometimes. Like, how could he want to be my friend? And like, am I even doing well as a Christian? And I remember a really specific moment where I felt like one by one, God just encouraged me. It was just time after time of like, remember what you used to be like before you knew me and look at what you're like now. Remember what you used to be like before you knew me and look at what you're like now. So the way I treat girls versus the way I now treat girls, the way my relationship maybe with swearing versus now, my relationship with envy versus now, and my relationship with greed versus now, all those kind of things. And all that is to say, you become like the people you spend time with. And if you spend time with Jesus, you become more like God. And that can only be a good thing. Like, that's what it means to be a Christian. The word Christian means little Christ.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, earlier in the podcast, we said about you don't pick your friends, you gravitate towards acceptance. Well, like, you get that with God as well. You know, you get acceptance from him.
Yeah.
So that's why it's almost easy to be friends with God, because he does accept you, because he sees everything, and he still wants to have a relationship with you and things. Brilliant. And so, like,
that's great that. Because for everyone else, all your other friends, in order to be accepted, and at least initially, you put on your best self, don't you? Like, when we were dating and stuff, I didn't rock up to the restaurant like picking my nose and farting and stuff. Like, I was like, no, I want Jade to not know I do that stuff, or at least to think like, oh no, he's amazing and he's just incredible. Like, And then you wait a little longer for them to get to know the real you. Mm. And the beauty of with God is you can approach him exactly as you are. In all your brokenness and all your mess, you can come to him and he will never reject you. He doesn't accept and he doesn't approve of everything you've ever done. How could he? Like, he's perfect and holy. And there are some things even you probably don't like about yourself and about the things you've done. But he will always love you in that. And he always accepts you. So, yeah, Jet, I think that's brilliant. If you want acceptance, true acceptance, not acceptance based on your behaviour, but acceptance based on the fact that you're his child and he loves you, God is the best friend you could ever have. Secondly, if you want to become the best version of yourself and you want to become like Jesus, who is the best person who's ever lived, then spend time with him. You become like the people you spend time with.
Light bulb.
So that's the end of the episode this week. One thing that I think is important just to note before we get onto worship of the week, and that is that no matter whether someone is wise or foolish, we're still called to love them. We're still supposed to treat them how we'd want to be treated. It's not a case of only loving people who are wise and good for us and therefore to hell with everyone else and we'll just close them out of our lives. But it is to say we just don't let people that we know have a negative influence on us into the kind of our inner circle. I'm sure that made sense, but I think it's a really important thing to say. Everyone was in Jesus' circle of concern, and therefore everyone should be in ours as well. You can still love people that you don't agree with. I just think that's essential for us to say. Mm-hmm. But let's finish then with worship of the week. Jay, can you hit us up with our live jingle?
Oh, I can't even remember what it was now because it's been so long.
It's okay. We remix this on the regular.
Okay, I'm just going to do whatever comes into my head.
Yeah, you got this, girl.
Worship of the week.
I think that pretty much was the standard. So. I think that's where your subconscious goes every time.
I think so. I do things in threes, you know?
It's good. Well, hopefully not kids, because we're very much done with our two.
Yeah, except for kids.
So worship of the week this week. I had a great song that a friend sent to me. In fact, a few friends sent this to me this week, called I Thank God. It's by Maverick City Worship, and it's so good. If you think that church is boring, or you think that church sometimes can be a bit dull and dreary, listen to this. Check it out on YouTube. Go over there now. Maverick City Worship. I Thank God. It's so upbeat. I challenge you to listen to it and not smile and not, to be honest, want to get up and dance.
Copy some of the dance moves.
Yeah. Even Jade wanted to get up and dance when she heard this. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope this has been really helpful for you with your healthy friendships. Hit us up on Instagram. Go over and check out the concentric circles diagram if that was confusing to you at any point. And we look forward to catching up with you next time. In our next episode, we're going to be interviewing comedian and preacher Andy Kind. It's going to be a great episode where we look at the value of humour, how we connect with people, and the importance of sharing our faith with others. Thanks so much. See you next week.
See you.
What did I say?
Thank you for listening to my mummy and daddy.
Thank you for listening to my mummy and daddy. See you soon. Welcome to Bring the Light.